Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Upstatus podcast. Today on the show, we have Teresa Pham. I did this with Kathy, actually, as well. Teresa, is your last name just pronounced Pham? Pham?
Yep, that's it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And we are here to celebrate Pulses Week, which happens in February and is all about loving your legumes. Now, you may be sitting there thinking, what the heck is a pulse? What's a legume? I want you to think beans and think peas. I think the most classic way that Aussies and Kiwis use legumes is, drum roll, nachos, chili beans, red kidney beans, black beans, whatever you use in your nachos. I think that's a classic. That just seems to be a meal where it makes sense for people. Well, my friends, if you haven't already, go and get some more cooking tips and tricks on legumes in the episode prior to this one. In that episode, we also cover the health benefits of legumes. I mean, if you're going to start eating them, you'd best know what they're going to do for you, right? That's a great episode and it covers off those two areas. So let's turn our attention back to today. We have Teresa Pham in the house. Teresa, she
Thank
is the nutrition manager at the Grains and Legumes Nutrition Council. We've actually had Kathy on the podcast once before, who is the GM of GLNC. I also wasn't sure how to pronounce her last name properly. So GLNC is a not-for-profit health promotion charity promoting the benefits of grains and legumes through evidence-based information. Now, Teresa is an accredited practicing dietitian and has experience working in public health and for the non-for-profit sector. Teresa has worked on nutrition programs and Commonwealth-funded projects, such as the evaluation of the health star rating system to monitor and achieve improvements within the Australian food supply. That would not have been easy. Teresa is highly skilled in food and nutrition data analytics and has a keen interest working on evaluation projects and nutrient databases. She works collaboratively with stakeholders from a variety of backgrounds, such as the FMCG, retailers, key opinion leaders, health professionals within the industry, government, and universities to improve the quality of the Australian food supply and health outcomes of the population. What a bio, Teresa.
Thank
Welcome to the
you.
podcast.
Thank you for having me.
No worries. Let's kick off with a non-pulse, non-legume re related question.
Yeah.
What do you get up to in your spare time? Can you tell us a bit about yourself?
I am a foodie at heart. I love food. My husband and I, we love entertaining. We love throwing dinner parties. I love trying to create tablescapes. He hates how much I spend money on it, but that's fine. So yeah, we love cooking. We love trying different cuisines, trying different things, and our friends and family are really our guinea pigs just to see what we like and what we don't like as part of our, I guess, weekly repertoire, what we can include in our weekly meals. So yeah, food, and I must say I love pastries and croissants are my weak spot.
Yeah, gotta love a pastry.
Yes.
Well, thanks for that. You've got lucky friends and families there for sure.
Yeah.
It's lovely to have you here with us, Teresa. So, Pulses Week, that's what we're talking about. Why are we celebrating Pulses Week?
So we want to really spread the word and the importance and benefits of pulses and legumes. They need more attention. I think we talk about so many other different food groups, different foods, but we kind of tend to forget about the pulses and the legumes. So they may be small, but I say they are mighty. They are nutrient powerhouses. They are a great source of plant protein, dietary fiber, and they really contain and provide numerous vitamins and minerals such as B vitamins, iron, and zinc. So in a little pulse, little legume, as you can see, they can provide many of those benefits, but they're also rich in soluble fiber, resistant starch, as well as insoluble dietary fiber, which has many benefits to gut health. And as we know, a good gut health helps reduce the risk of chronic diseases. So that's all the benefits there, but then there's the problem where we as Aussies aren't actually consuming enough legumes. So based on research a couple of years ago, we saw that Australians are only consuming about 19.3 grams of legumes per day, which is significantly lower than the recommendation of about at least half a cup, which is equivalent to about 75 grams. So we're only consuming about a quarter of the recommendations that we need to be consuming. So that in itself needs attention. We need to spread the word. We need to spread messages about the importance of legumes. So given that World Pulses Day is on the 10th of Feb, the Grains and Legumes Nutrition Council is celebrating Pulse Week over a week-long period.
Amazing. A week-long celebrating pulses.
Yeah.
How good. 19.3 grams of legumes per day when we're really recommended that 75 grams, that half cup of legumes.
Yeah.
Yeah, not doing too good there, which we will get down, like we will get into the detail around that a bit later on. We talk about dietary guidelines. So with it being Pulses Week, it's really good to get an understanding of what's happening out there in the market when it comes to legumes. So, Teresa, this is where you come in. You love your nutrition data.
Yes.
Now, GLNC conduct audits, right? So you go out and you analyze a certain category, food category, and then you provide nutrition insights off the back of that. First off, can you let us know a bit about how you undertake these audits and how often you do them and across what sort of categories?
Yeah, absolutely. So we really see these audits as really important because we can always talk about, you know, consume this, eat that. But at the end of the day, consumers, shoppers, they have these decisions and they're facing the supermarket retailers. So it's for us to know to be in touch with what our consumers actually face with. So that's why we do find these audits key pieces of work that we do at GLNC. So we conduct audits in four major retailers in Australia. So in Coles, Woolworths, Aldi and IGA. It's based in New South Wales. So we have a consultant that goes in and collects all that data, and then we enter that data onto a platform and then I analyze all of that data. So we look at the four major retailers because we do hope that it captures the greatest coverage of products that is available in the food supply, but also we do supplement that data with a Mintel database to ensure that we have the greatest coverage. So sometimes some products may be out of stock, not on shelf, not available. Different states may have different products that are available as well, so we try to incorporate that through that supplementary desktop collection.
Yeah, that's a really thorough data collection. That's great because, as we know, supermarket and what's on the shelves can change quite quickly. It might be the same product as well, but packaging can change as the product recipe might be changed. So a lot of changes do happen. So is it right there? Is it every couple of years? So every 2 years you'll repeat and look at the same category. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. So as we focus on grains and legume containing products, we do look at certain categories every 2 years. So we do think that the 2 years is a good time frame where we look at the changes. So as you mentioned, packing changes, reformulation occurs, so changing the nutrition quality of products. So that's why we look at the 2 year time frame to see how much has changed within that category. So within those 2 years, what we tend to look at is we assess the changes, the trends, we look at nutritional insights and some of the market trending claims. So that could be nutrition content claims, health claims unpack, and some when we look at trends. I'm going to use one example, like plant-based. We see that that is quite trendy and that is trending over the last 5 or so years. So how has that changed over the years as well? And, you know, potentially in 2 years, 3 years' time, is that still going to be quite prominent on pack as compared to today?
Yes, great. Okay, cool. I bet that 2 years comes around really quickly.
Yes, and we think there's always constantly categories to keep going through. So it's a continuous piece of work that we are continually working on.
Yes. So you looked at legumes in 2021, is that right? And now you've looked at legumes in 2023. So what have been some of the latest insights that you're able to share with us today?
Yeah, so the 2 years, so from we did it in 2023 and we found that we collected a total of 359 legume products. So that's across six categories. So when I say these six categories or these 359 products, it's in the canned, dried, frozen, as well as baked beans, tofu, and tempeh products.
Mm-hmm.
So from 2021, we saw about a 12% increase in number of products. So it is an increase. It's not substantial, but we do need to remember that the methodology did slightly change a little bit based from 2021 to 2023. So that's just something to be mindful of. And we saw that there was an increase in terms of product numbers across the majority of the categories, just slight increases. However, there was a slight decrease in number of dried legumes. So that's quite interesting. But one thing I did find, which was a fun fact, was we came across 22 different kinds of legumes, which is available on shelf and in retail. So that could be frozen or dried or canned or chilled. So which shows that there is a lot
Okay.
of variety out there.
Yes, yeah, there's plenty out there. So a decrease in the dried, and I mean, people are feeling busier, right? They've got lots going on. There's lots of pressures around their life with work and children, family, and all the rest of it. Dried legumes is another step in the cooking process, right? Because you've got to rehydrate the dried legumes, whereas canned legumes, just crack the can open, drain it out, boom, you've got your legumes. I mean, that perhaps one reason why. So what the change, the 12% increase in products overall, what do you think may be behind this? What are some of the reasons and some of the things we're seeing across the nutrition industry that point to this increase?
Yeah, so I do think, oh, I'm going to say, I think plant-based eating trend is definitely one of the key drivers. So I'd say, at GLNC, we do a bit of work and focus in terms of plant-based eating and dietary patterns. And we have seen that that is a trend that's really taken place and really shot off. So I would say plant-based eating, we do know that about one in three Australians are reducing their meat consumption. And that could be for various reasons. It could be health, environmental, sustainability, for animal welfare reasons, whatever reasons. But we do know that there is an increase in consumers consuming, or Aussies consuming, meat. So they're potentially turning to legumes. So it is, if we think about it is a whole food that's packed with protein along with various vitamins and minerals. So it's not surprising that the legume category is growing. More and more consumers are transitioning or trying to shift to more plant-based dietary patterns as well to include more plant proteins as part of their diet. So that is, I would say, one key driver. But even just thinking about the situation that we're in at the moment, what is the financial climate? So, with the increasing cost of living, the fact that people are time poor, everyone's always on the run, as you mentioned, busy family, kids, children, whatever it may be, legumes are a great option. They're an affordable source of protein, and they're versatile. So, as you mentioned, crack the can open, put it in a salad, or bulking up meals, so adding a bit more protein to a certain pasta dishes or whatever it may be. So, very versatile, very quick, and very convenient source.
Yes, that's a good one. Adding it to a carbohydrate rich meal already and changing the ratio slightly. So bringing up the protein and bringing up the fiber, even with mashed potato, say that's a staple in your house because it's a classic, right? It tastes delicious. You could start mashing up Kenalili beans, which are also white-ish, and mix them into your mashed potato.
And I actually saw something I have never tried before. I saw last week, it was on a reel, someone making nachos, but with guacamole, they've also mashed in chickpeas. So it's just another option of trying to add in or like experimenting with different textures, different foods, different legumes, to just increase the quality of our meals that we're eating as well. But in terms of taste and texture, there might be not much change.
Yeah, that's a great one. And even if there's children, right, and it needs to be green still, you can get a green pea and smash up a green pea or an edamame to put with the avocado. But
Absolutely.
chickpea's great as well.
Yes.
So yeah, they're affordable, right? They're affordable nutrition. They are really nutritious. They offer that nutrition. They're convenient. If you're buying a canned legume, it's really not that difficult. And you can just stack it in your pantry for when you need it. It's not like you need to buy them fresh and be on the pulse with buying them fresh. So that's also really convenient too. And then once you know how to use them, they're tasty as well. But it's just getting over that barrier, I think, of that taste element, which obviously Terry and I spoke about in the previous episode. So, Teresa, everyone loves popular food items. So, which legumes are the most popular? What did you find in your findings?
Okay, so I'm just going to talk about the three main categories, being canned, dried, and frozen. So, looking in terms of the canned legumes, they were actually the most commonly available. So, they accounted for nearly over 40% of the products that were collected and analyzed. And that's not really a surprise. If we think about, we walk through the supermarket aisles, which I love doing, we do see that the canned legumes aisle, it is quite substantial. So that's about 40%. And when we looked a bit further in terms of the canned legumes, which type of legume was most popular? It was the chickpea, which is great. Looking at dried legumes, we saw that lentils were most popular amongst the dried legumes. And then when we think about frozen legumes, sometimes I forget about this, but peas were the most common, followed by green beans. So yeah, they were the most popular and commonly available products when looking at our audit.
Great. And with chickpeas, I think chickpea, this is just an opinion and there's no fact behind this, but I think chickpea has sort of been around social media a bit and is probably the legume that's had the biggest airtime, I suppose, on social media perhaps. And that's where people are a bit more familiar with it, maybe. I don't know. Do you have a thought on
Agree.
that?
I would agree. I think I would say when we do look at recipes online, obviously, using legumes or pulses or whatever it may be, chickpeas always tend to come up first. And you think, oh, what can I do with chickpeas? And this is when I talk with my friends as well. It's like, oh, chickpea curry. Like that's something very common. Or we add chickpeas to our salad. Or, reverse chickpeas as a snack. So I completely agree with you there, Steph. I think chickpeas do have the most airtime. So I think what we're trying to do is there's so many more. As I mentioned, we saw 22 different kinds of legumes on the shelf. Let's talk about the other ones that, cannellini beans or bolognese beans, red beans, navy beans, whatever it may be. Let's think about how we can experiment and play with these products and include them more as part of our meals.
Definitely, and green peas, I think that's a great example. People won't think of a green pea necessarily as a legume, but it will be on a lot of people's plates out there, especially kiddies' plates where you put them the frozen corn, frozen carrot, frozen peas. So they are getting a bit of legume there, which is great, a bit of plant protein, and then yes, the green beans as well. So food manufacturers, they like to put nutrition and health claims on pack, right? If they can say more about their product, it just gets more attention, I suppose, from consumers, and they think, oh, plant protein, oh, high fiber, whatever it is. These claims are regulated, so a food manufacturer can't just say whatever they like on product. So when it comes to the legumes, Sreeza, what's the most common claim on pack that you found as part of your order?
Yeah, it's a great one. I'm very interested around claims when we do these audits. So in terms of looking at the legume category from 2021 to 2023, we saw that the dietary fiber claims were definitely the standout claims, and that it was quite consistent. It was the most utilized claim on pack over the 2 years. We did see there was about an 11% increase from 2021 to 2023 in terms of dietary fiber claims on pack. And I guess mums, I would say mums, dads, whoever is shopping, they know dietary fiber. We've heard of it in many times. So it's probably one of those claims that we know it stands out. So when they're quickly or in busy, once again, time poor, running through the shelves, the aisles, you see that, great source of dietary fiber. It's something that they quickly will put in their shopping bag, their basket, whatever it may be. So yeah, definitely dietary fiber was a standout claim. I did find something quite interesting, which I would like to share, which was the presence of health claims. So, once you mentioned, health claims are regulated by the Food Standards Code under FSSAN, so Food Standards Australia, New Zealand. And that's really looking at the relationship between food and a health effect. And one that we did see quite common in the legume category was linking the protein with the growth of muscle mass. So that was most common. And interestingly, 2 years ago, there were none of these claims. So now in 2023, we're seeing products where they're putting the claim between protein and muscle growth and mass. So I guess it's that message that a lot of some of these food companies and manufacturers are saying, this is a great source of protein. It's a plant protein. And we're even seeing the use of the word plant protein on these packs as well, which once again, in 2021, we didn't see any of these on these legume packs. So I guess it's that messaging around how this is a complementary source for meat products, if anything, that it is a great protein source as well.
Yes, definitely. A lot in that. So health claims, once again, health claims are regulated too, and companies can choose to use a health claim that's already it already exists essentially. And they can be like, yep, okay, I want to use the protein muscle mass health claim, and they can go and put that on their product. So that's great that you're seeing that the product actually has to have a certain nutrient criteria. They have to fit a certain nutrient criteria to be able to use a health claim. And I imagine these all being whole plant foods,
Yes.
that there would be no problem with them fitting that nutrient criteria.
Yeah, exactly. So they're pre-approved health claims which have gone through rigorous research, through FSANS, which there's a list that I guess food manufacturers can look at. And you are correct in terms of they have to meet certain nutrient criteria as well as eligibility criteria to make these claims unpack.
And I think the thing with plant protein, so a plant food, plant foods contain fiber. So when you're having a plant protein, that means you're also having fiber. And Australians and New Zealanders aren't consuming enough fiber. So you only get fiber in plant foods. Therefore, you're still getting your protein, but you're also getting fiber, which that in itself is a really positive change when you are making some switches or adding some more plant protein to your diet. You're getting that fiber, which has a lot of health benefits associated with it as well.
Exactly. And that's a good news story for us when we do talk about legumes. You're like getting protein and fiber in one go.
Exactly. On fiber. So, what are the highest fiber legumes out there, Teresa? You would have looked at all the fiber content of all these different legume products. What's the highest?
Yeah, so based on our audit that we collected, we found that bolognese beans had the highest fiber content, followed by navy beans. But when we do look online, they are all quite consistent in terms of the fiber content is quite similar. And online it does say navy beans, but yeah, based on our research and based on our audit, we do see bolognese beans. And we just do need to remember as well, our audit results are based on what we have obtained from online sources as well as what's in store. So it's not completely the whole Australian food supply. It's, I would say, a good proportion of the Australian food supply.
It's a good chunk. You've done well with
Yeah,
it. I've
thank
actually never ever bought bolognese beans. Am I even saying that right?
I think so, yeah.
I've never bought them and I actually haven't like seen them, but you know, as soon as you hear something or see something, then all of a sudden you're seeing it.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely going to add that to my shopping list and I'm definitely going to trial it out. So I've mentioned nachos, Teresa. It's just a classic, right? But what are some of your favorite ways? You know, as a dietitian, as a foodie, what are some of your favorite ways to eat legumes? And
I
actually, if you don't mind, your partner as well, because often it can be quite different, female to male.
love. Yep. Interesting. So I'm going to say we grew up not eating a lot of legumes. So it was quite interesting with going to work at GLNC. I was like, oh, okay. But growing up, we had a lot of tofu. And I sometimes you do forget, but I'm like, yes, we do eat a lot of tofu. But husband and I, we love Japanese food. So we love edamame. So one of our favorite dishes is really an edamame bean salad with soba noodles. And sometimes we do a bit of like tofu or salmon with it. So just think fresh, like radish, cucumber, watercress, all mixed together in with like a salad. But also edamame once again as a snack. So we love to do it with a bit of garlic and chili and having it as appetizers, when we're throwing dinner parties. And even if we just parboil it and just have it as a snack. So that is something we both love, edamame. But I did try a recipe in our ebook, which was the cheesy beans and toast over the weekend. And I
Ooh.
must say, it is a winner. It is cheesy deliciousness, like just good, really delicious. So that's probably something that we'll do on a weekend where we have a bit of time, which is chilling and having a slow Saturday morning, I would say.
Beautiful. And I feel like that could be one for the males. You know, they might be into the cheesy beans and toast stick. Yeah. And just,
I loved it.
yeah. And females. On the edamame beans, they are really easy, right? Do you just buy them frozen? Do you just buy the frozen ones from Woolies or Coles? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely frozen. And then I will just blanch it, if anything, blanch it. And then I could always cook it. Or sometimes you just blanch it and then you can just eat it as it is. Funny thing, I did give it to my nephew to try once. So he's 3. Very good for their fine motor skills. And I saw this on Instagram. I never thought about it. I was like, I'm going to give it to him and give it a go and try. And he really enjoyed it. And he did, you start seeing him eat the beans as well. So it's like, it's something they play with, but they also eat. So I was like, it's a good trick for parents out there if they want to get that, increase that legume intake. Edamame beans are fun.
That's a great trick. I need to tell my siblings that one for sure. So there's sort of two different ways of eating it. There's the way, if you think about when you're going to a Japanese restaurant and you order a starter edamame where it comes out in the pods and there's the beans in the pods and you like suck them out of the pod essentially, which is what your 3-year-olds will love. And then you can also buy them just as the bean, so there's no pod, just as a frozen bean at the supermarket as well. And that's super easy for throwing into your salads and throwing into your stir fries. I just think that's a bean that not many people know about. It is in the frozen vegetable section down the bottom, obviously, because people aren't really eating it yet, but that's definitely one to add to the repertoire, I think, for sure.
Absolutely. I'm all for edamame beans. I'm an edamame bean advocate. So, yes, definitely.
Yeah. And edamame is soy, right? It's an immature or young soybean. Tofu and tempeh. So they're also made of soybeans, made from soybeans. Can you tell us the difference between tofu and tempeh, Teresa?
Okay, food science, I think. So tofu, from what I recall, is made from curdled soy milk. So the curds are drained and then pressed into a block, whereas tempeh is also, once again, made from soybeans, but it's been cooked, fermented, and then molded into a block. So taste-wise, they are slightly different. So from in terms of tofu, it's a bit more bland. There's not as much flavor into them. So that's why they do say they're quite versatile, where you can add them to stir fries and you can add flavoring sauces to whatever you want to tofu. And then whereas tempeh, it has a bit of more of a nutty flavor. So that I would say will be the two main differences. And I would say it's a bit more firm compared to tofu. You can get soft tofu, firm tofu, but the texture of tempeh would be a bit more harder.
I would definitely recommend if both of these foods were foreign to people to start on tofu. That's my personal preference for sure. And I think is usually the one that people do go towards. Oh, you'll have the results. Was tofu more available than tempeh in
Yeah,
supermarkets?
so tofu was definitely more readily available than tempeh. I can't remember the numbers on top of my
Yeah.
head. We do tend to like look at protein, what's the protein amount? So from our results, we saw that tofu was higher in protein, but just do remember we did come across more tofu products. So that's why the results do say that tofu had higher protein content. But when we do look, that tempeh did have slightly higher in general, overall, it is slightly higher. But yeah, in the supermarkets, you would see there is in the chilled section, there is a lot more of readily available tofu products than tempeh. Health food stores may have a bit more tempeh products, but yeah, based on our audit, that's what we did come across.
Yes, I have actually recently heard that the health food stores may have pretty good tasting tempeh, so I'm not going to rule it out. I
No.
probably shouldn't have even said that, but start with tofu and then if you like, go to tempeh. They are the highest protein legume out there. That's why they're so good because they have the fiber and they also compete and do really well on protein.
Absolutely.
So it's such a good legume to include.
Exactly. And I do recall that they are a complete source of protein. So once again, very comparable to if you want to switch from meat products, tofu, tempeh is a great product.
Yes, they contain those essential amino acids that
Yes.
meat contain.
Yeah.
Amazing. Okay, enough of the soy. Dietary guidelines. Now, I've done an episode of Dietary Guidelines recently with the amazing Dr. Rosemary Stanton. She was so great. Now, for those listening in Australia and New Zealand right now, we have these dietary guidelines that are set by our government. These are the leading public health nutrition resource for the country. New Zealand and Australia have different ones. And Australia are currently reviewing their guidelines. So every few years, or well, when they get funding from the government, they review the guidelines because nutrition science changes, it evolves, it needs to be updated. So the review currently, Teresa, how do you think plant proteins, so like legumes, should be positioned in the dietary guidelines?
So this is a topic that we are very passionate about, and we do look at in terms of the work that we do at GLNC. So we really look at international guidelines. So what's happening? What's available? What's being displayed in these guidelines? And we have seen that there has been a shift globally in the guidelines for consumption of plant proteins. So we're seeing in these global guidelines that they prioritize plant proteins. So we see it as a first option. So when I say it as a first option, So we think of potentially the UK Eat Well Guide. We see that pulses are grouped together with the protein-rich foods, and we see that pulses and legumes are the first option. So if we want to consume foods from the protein-rich foods, they tend to recommend and try to go for these pulses and legumes. So we are seeing that happen, and that's something that we do advocate for. We do want to see some of that within the Australian dietary guidelines, because back to our first message, we don't consume enough. I mean, we want to have more complementary protein sources. So that's where we hope to see plant proteins as part of Australian dietary guidelines. But also if we think about Dutch guidelines, you know, they say to eat more plant-based foods, you know, try to eat less animal-based foods, but there is the mention of plant-based protein being more prominent amongst these global guidelines. So yeah, it will be great to see what happens, and we are definitely still advocating for plant proteins in our Australian dietary guideline reviews.
Yes, amazing. So just on that, there's five main food groups that the dietary guidelines recommend us to eat every day.
Mm-hmm.
One of these groups is the protein group. And what you're saying is currently, so the last edition of the dietary guidelines was released in 2013, and currently they state that from the protein group, we want to have about 2, 2.5, 3 serves, depends on your age, of these foods each day. And then they list them out and they say lean meats and poultry, fish, eggs, tofu, nuts, seeds, legumes, and beans. So they've got the animal at the front and then the plant at the back end. So what you're suggesting, Teresa, is it essentially switching it around and giving more prominence and leading with the plant proteins, because really the ratio should be slightly higher in the plant protein front than animal protein when it comes to health.
Exactly. So yep, that's right. Trying to get the plant proteins front and center, first option that we see. And yeah, we are working towards it. We're hoping that we do see that, but it's still a long process. But you know, first steps first, like it's great for us to see our Australian dietary guidelines being reviewed, because it's one of the oldest guidelines at the moment. So that's a good first step, but yeah, definitely pushing and advocating for a bit more in terms of the plant protein space.
Yeah, 10 years. Gosh.
Yeah.
And you have used the word complementary quite a bit throughout this podcast as well, which is great. And what we're saying is it's not about getting rid of animal foods, animal proteins, and substituting with plant protein. It's just about these two complement, and we need both in our diet. And if you choose to have your meat, then we can totally have both. It's just about making some swaps and adding some more plant protein to your diet than what you currently do.
Exactly.
19.3 grams of legumes ain't enough.
No, exactly. And I think it's that shift. If we want to change our dietary patterns to, we say, the plant-based dietary pattern, it's just that slow shift that we do. It's not one day you wake up, you're going to eat meat, and the next day you're not going to eat meat. It's just that slow transition to what makes you feel comfortable, and it's sustainable as well. So that's how we go about it, and I think it makes complete sense.
Yeah, exactly. Don't wake up on Pulses Week and say, I'm going to now become a vegan. It's not the way to do it. Well, Teresa, thank you so much for being here with us today. Thanks for all the work you do as a dietitian for GLNC, and you've probably done a whole bunch before GLNC as well. You are out there helping Aussies become more familiar with the mighty legume family, which is amazing. Now, for you listening out there, it's about action. So share this podcast with someone who is working on their nutrition and health. Get your shopping list out and write down chickpeas or lentils, and download the GLNC recipe ebook and find a recipe. I should probably just give you one of those things, but I'm giving you three. So do all three. You can do it. It's Pulses Week. How good. Now, just lastly, Teresa, what is the next category audit GLNC are looking at doing?
Oh, this is an interesting one. We are actually looking at plant-based snacks. So we know that snacking is such a big trend. Everyone snacks. So, and this whole, as mentioned before, plant-based trend. So let's group those two together and see what's out there, and see what are people faced with, what are shoppers faced with, consumers faced with, and how innovative a lot of these food manufacturers have been as well. So yeah, it's a watch this space category. We are out in collection. So hopefully we could get results out and share them with everyone soon.
That's incredible. I have another question, but I'll ask you that perhaps offline. Thank you so much. Thanks again. And we will no doubt have you back again soon. Thanks, Teresa.
Thanks, Steph. Thanks, everyone.